The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
One of the interesting principles of Buddhist practice or ideas that take in Buddhism is that can be summarized in a very simple statement that your world begins with you. When you wake up in the morning, the world wakes up with you. Your world wakes up with you. And the world that you encounter and experience and read about is all through the means and the medium of you yourself. What you hear gets processed in your brain. What you see gets processed. What you taste, what you smell, what you feel in your body. And you don't know the world really without it going somehow through your senses. Even if you read about it and learn abstract ideas about it, it's still your world is through the filter, the medium of you. And it's kind of represented by the very important poem in early Buddhism, in the first two poems of the Dhammapada. I might have recited it here a couple weeks ago. That all experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. That's quite a phenomenal statement, putting the mind at the center of it all. That everything, the mind is first. And one way of understanding it that is that whatever you say, whatever ways you act, and even whatever ways you think, are in the medium of your mind. The mind as a we don't really know what the mind is, but the mind the gestalt or the mental processes that we have are required to be in relationship to the world. And in the Buddhist idea that the world, there's two worlds. There's a world that's kind of out there, whatever that might be, beyond you. And then there's the world of you, your world. And your world, and it has a lot to do with how you encounter the world and how you act in the world and speak in the world and how you process the world. And so you're a kind of like a central character, or your mind is a central, central character in your world that you live in. And so Buddhist practice has a lot to do with placing ourselves close in, standing close to ourselves, our mind, to really be here where our world gets born. In a sense, it gets born fresh every moment. Certainly every morning when we wake up, your world wakes up with you. Your world changes moment by moment. But a lot of that has to do with what goes on inside of you in your mind, the interests of the mind, the movements of the mind, the reactions of the mind, the thoughts of the mind. It has such a hugely important role for your world that you live in. What this implies is that if the world that you live in is to become a better place, what do you pay attention to? Where is your center of gravity? Where do you focus? You, your mind, your heart, what's going on here? What happens in this processing? What happens in this reacting and thinking and speaking and understanding the world or seeing the world or constructing the world that you are doing in this world that is born with you? So Buddhist practice has a lot to do with taking responsibility for that and really seeing that deeply. Now, in a sense, each of you here today came and meditated for 45 minutes before this talk. And I appreciated our time together. I appreciated meditating here. I appreciated how quiet it was. I don't know how quiet it was in your mind, but it's pretty impressive that a group of people like this can come together and sit in silence, I think with relative comfort. I didn't actually look myself, but I kind of imagined there weren't a lot of side glances to, you know, what's going on here, and that, you know, it's pretty impressive, the stillness, sitting still, being here like this the way you were, a group of people like this. What if every time you were going to do anything important in your life, any time you were going to express an opinion, any time that you were considering acting on a desire, any time you were considering saying something spiteful or resentful or angry, that before you did that, you meditated for 45 minutes. How would your life be different? How, so if the world gets born in you every moment, how does that world get born differently after 45 minutes of meditation? How does that change what you say, what you do, how you say it, how you do it, what choices you make, what you do with your life? If every time you were going to, you know, do something important, you meditated for 45 minutes. That's the question. What do you think of that question? I think it's a great question. Not that I want you to meditate every time before there's anything important. That's kind of unrealistic, right? But there might be a very important lesson to be learned by understanding what is it that meditation does. How do things change for you? How would you live differently? How would you speak, act, do differently if every time there was an important thing that had to be done, you meditated for 45 minutes? What can you learn from that about what's important, or what is the important source inside of you that you want to be in touch with? What would you learn for yourself? Well, how is that? Is this a question that you can kind of understand? So since we're a relatively small group of people here, since it's a holiday, I think I love these kinds of days when it's just kind of more cozy. But it also gives us a chance to have some conversations together around these things, rather than having me do these, you know, monologues that I do up here. So what I'd like to propose is that you gather together with maybe whatever number you'd like, 2, 3, 4, probably not more than 4 people, just the people near you or something, and see if you can answer that question in whatever way that you understood that question that I posed. It doesn't have to be, it's not a test, you know, like a particular thing. But what I propose, that as you sit with your little group, that don't say everything you can possibly say. Make only one point of what you can say, and then let the other people make their point. And maybe think of this more of more as a listening exercise than a speaking exercise. Because if you go around and you each say a point, it'll come back to you and you can make it your next point, but you have been influenced by the other people who spoke. They'll give you ideas, that you'll think about things you never thought about, and you might find yourself saying something completely new after it's gone around a few times. Does that make sense? So maybe like 3 or 4, groups of 3 or 4 or something like that probably is a good number. And if you don't want to talk, do it. You're welcome to just sit quietly and not participate if that's comfortable to hear people talk. It's kind of nice to meditate with people chattering. But it's also very nice to have a chance to talk with other people who meditate and interested in what we're doing here. So that's what I propose. We'll do that. I thought we'd do it for maybe 10, 15 minutes, and then we can gather back together here and continue as a group. So if you don't mind, if you find someone and have a little chat, and I'll ring a bell when the time comes.
With skill, with practitioners like ourselves wanting to make an environment that is more wholesome and skillful and uplifting and non-depressing, that's what I appreciate over coming here. Thank you, you guys.
Are you now giving us all magical wands? For the 45 minutes?
Well, maybe. We'll give it to each other. Let's see what happens now. So that was a thought experiment. I don't anticipate any of you are now going to, every time before you move or speak or scratch your nose, you're going to sit for 45 minutes. What would life be like if you, before all kinds of important things, you actually sat for 45 minutes? Even then, you're not going to do that. Unlikely. But what is it you might have learned from that thought experiment about what's really important for you, what you would like to be in touch with, what inspires you to be in touch with inside of you, what you might learn from that about how you want to encounter the world more often? That's maybe available if you just think about it. Coming out of meditation is a teacher for, or points to the value of. So I wonder, so what were the lessons that you might take from this thought experiment that you could apply realistically to your life, besides sitting more? Do you have the mic over there, or where's the...
I think what it just reminds me about is I don't have to believe everything that I'm thinking. I can maybe step away from that. I don't need to necessarily do 45 minutes of meditation to remember that.
Great. So even just remembering this little phrase, I don't have to believe everything I think, for some people is phenomenally liberating. Thank you. Is it on? The green light should be on.
One of the things that we talked about in our group was that we might not have a chance to meditate for 45 minutes before we do some of the things during our day or any important thing. But if we start off the day meditating or go on retreat on a regular basis, that can help to trigger some of the thoughts, like the one you shared, that we don't have to believe everything we think, or just give us a different perspective.
Great. Yeah. So sit every day, and sometimes that carries over into the rest of the day if you sit. And I've sometimes given people who meditate every day for a few years at a time the exercise of stopping. And one person I told, who's actually meditated for maybe 20 years every day, I told him to stop. He started crying. I didn't tell him to stop forever. I just it was meant to be an exercise. But what some people learn is then they see what a big impact meditation has on their daily life, that it kind of creeps up on them slowly. They're calmer, more clear, more something. And then sometimes the exercise of stopping, and so, wow, this, I really miss it, or it makes a big difference in my life. Sometimes. So someone else.
I have an app on my phone. It's called We Croak.
We what?
Croak.
We quote. We quote.
We croak. Like a frog.
Croak. Like a frog?
It's a death contemplation application.
Oh, death contemplation. Croak. Like, you know.
It sends a notification, you're going to die, with an inspirational message.
And that little croaking message is equivalent to 45 minutes of meditation?
Five times a day. And it reminds me,
yes,
that I don't have a lot of time, uh-huh, to make the best of it. And whatever is going on that seems very, very serious is going to be over not too long from now. And some people find death to be depressing to contemplate, but for me, I find it very liberating, and it does help me behave better.
Great. There is a long-standing tradition in Buddhism to do death contemplation, and to do frequent. If you go to Thailand, for example, the monastics there will do a lot of it, and they'll have photographs on their walls of corpses, and they go to the anatomy labs to see human parts and cadavers and all kinds of things. Some people find it, rather than being upsetting, there's something about it which is very powerful in it freeing us from some of our preoccupations.
I think if I did that, I would definitely do less. But I think some of the things I do are inspired or for ego or to feel important or that I just exist. And so I think I would do less and it would slow things down considerably.
Nice. And some people in our climate here would now get very anxious that or upset the idea that they do less. We're supposed to do more. But for you, is that a welcome idea? And if I may ask, can you say a little more why that's a welcome idea to do less?
I think I'm sensitive to the hustle and bustle of this area, and I'm also a high school teacher, and so there's a lot going on every day, every minute. And more than what we really need to be doing. So, and my motto this year is no rush.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you. Up here in the front here.
Yes, so I think one of the things that I've learned with meditating and thinking about just the experience of it is to, you know, things just don't always go well. Oddly, I don't know. And so, you know, things don't always go well with my communication or with important things that happen. And I think what I have learned is some persistence in re-engaging with kindness. So if it goes poorly, not to just give up. Like, you don't give up on the cushion. Uh-huh. Either that or you just sit there until the bell rings. It's a form of not. So to re-engage, but re-engage even with myself with kindness when it doesn't go well. Mm.
Fantastic. I love hearing that. And I don't know what this is exactly what you meant, but 45 minutes of meditation every day, for example, is in order to, you have to keep doing it, no matter what comes up. You have to, you know, whatever comes up, you can try to be present. You're probably mindful for this too, and so that's persistence of not giving up and doing it. Then can spill over into the rest of your life that you don't have to give up. You can keep showing up, and for you, kindly, very nice.
Something really powerful said in our group.
Turn it on.
What?
Why not?
Thanks.
I thought there was something really powerful said in our group when we were talking about how frequently we end up saying things that are hurtful. And I apologize if I haven't got the model correctly, but the nonviolent communication has this concept of if somebody says something really unskillful, it's more a reflection that of an unskillful action being caused by an unmet need. And that in itself is a powerful meditation to carry around with oneself when one is engaging with everyone. Mm. You know, is this really what I'm hearing, or is there an unmet need here that I'm not hearing?
So I think understanding our unmet needs is very important. I don't know about for you, but I have less needs when I meditate. And that makes my life a lot easier. Did I saw a hand here?
No, I was just going to ask. You said
he can't hear you. He's deaf.
Oh.
So you have to kind of.
Hi. I was just going to ask if you could repeat if a what caused by an unmet need. Sorry. Can you hear me?
Oh, it's a Buddhist. It's a Buddhist concept.
Yes.
Unskillful actions, unskillful speech. Unskillful means unwholesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Buddhist way of saying bad. Or harmful or something.
If it looks unskillful, it isn't unskillful. I was trying to make a Zen joke.
Okay. The other one is it that? There.
Yeah, this talk was very timely for me. Just a few hours ago, I was reading a book by Shinzen Young called The Science of Enlightenment. And he talked about doing the practice of developing that sort of focus and collectedness in meditation and then consciously learning to bring it into first simple tasks and then more complex tasks so that you're not kind of just running on momentum from the morning meditation, kind of practicing to hold it.
That's really ideal, to only rely on meditation to kind of, keep you going in a calm way or clear way or balanced way, which is great. But the real lesson for Buddhism to become free is to really understand how to bring a free mind or a clear mind into every encounter we have. And if you do that really well, then you don't have to kind of renew yourself with meditation because you're being renewed all along. And so we learn something in meditation. We learn about a state of mind or a way of being or how to let go or how not to be caught up in things. And then the art, to make it really come alive, it's to take the lessons of meditation and begin seeing how this play out in daily life and how to replicate some of the aspects of meditation in daily life. Not that you have to be super still or calm or always equanimous, but there are, lessons to be learned from meditation that apply to every situation in daily life. And so to begin kind of paying attention to what goes on in meditation with that in mind. So, for example, that's why this exercise, what do you learn from 45 minutes of meditation about what you value, what your priorities are, where you want to be in touch, what place inside of you do you want to be in touch with when you speak and act? How do you want to see and look and show up and be present for the world around you? Meditation might give you a very different sense of that than if you spend your day at the mall or something. I don't know what, or if you're a very fast-paced, ambitious work environment where people are always kind of running and pushing and trying to get ahead. meditation gives us a very different reference point. And so don't just rest on your calm laurels. The idea is meditation to learn from what's going on there so that we can learn how that applies in the rest of our life. And that was one of the really important lessons for me that I was meditating every day for probably a year when I started. And at some point during that second year, it occurred to me that my mind in meditation was the same mind as outside of meditation. And why did I have this line, this arbitrary divide between Gil meditating and Gil not meditating? And I so valued the integrity that I was discovering through meditation in meditation. When I realized it was arbitrary, the line between meditation and non-meditation, then the quest for me was how to bring that integrity into the rest of my life. And that became a quest that brought me deeper and deeper into Buddhism, because that's where I thought I can get help. But not to help with more meditation, but help with applying what I was discovering in meditation, the integrity I was discovering in the rest of my life. So it's great to meditate, and then it's great also to take the lessons of meditation and apply them into our life. May you do so. Well, thank you very much.
Nice to see you.